Today. Smiley face. She doesn't respond. But it's early. And if this past week is anything to go by, she doesn't usually wake up till 8:30. It's only 7. But I am amped up. I throw the covers off, swing my legs out of bed, head to the bathroom, brush my teeth, take a shower, and get ready for the day. I leash up Bowie because he's part of the plan. Because dogs should always be part of the plan. A little after 8, we leave my place, he jumps into the back seat of my car, and we make our way to the dog park. The first time I saw London here, she told me she goes to this park every Saturday morning. So, I'll wait for her. I have a tennis ball, a rawhide, and a hedgie, all with Mr. Darcy's name on them. I scan the park. No sign of her, but it's still early. I toss a ball to Bowie, over and over and over again. For 15 minutes. For 20. For 30. Finally, my phone dings in my pocket and my heart fucking soars above the stratosphere because it's a text from her. I'm here in LA. I slept at Emery's last night with Mr. Darcy and we're on our way to the dog park. Confession. I was so excited to get your text this morning. How are you? How am I? I'm amazing, because everything makes sense, everything feels possible. And then, everything is incredible when, a few minutes later, a gorgeous, fantastic, big-hearted brunette opens the gate into the dog park, red glasses on, a Beverly Hills 90210 shirt hugging her frame, and a blonde spitfire of a chihuahua mix at her feet. London unclips his leash, and the teacup takes off, straight for Bowie. I take off, straight for her. I'm grinning. My heart is flying. I hope. I hope so damn hard. 5 seconds, 4 seconds, 3 seconds, 2, and then I'm right in front of her. I didn't expect to see you here, she says, but she can't seem to hide the happiness in her voice and the smile on her face. Her eyes are curious, though. She's waiting for me to take the next step. That's on me. I'm the one who broke things off. I'm the one who has to let her know how I feel. I left a gift for you at your house last night, but I'm guessing you didn't get it.
I didn't, but about 10 minutes ago, Nate called and told me about it. I happen to love dog presents.
It's for both of you, I say, and I want to tell her everything, but I need to start with an apology. I set a hand on her shoulder as the dogs play. It feels good to touch her again. I'm sorry about yesterday morning at breakfast.
Why are you sorry?
Because I said all the wrong things at all the wrong times. She arches her brow as Mr. Darcy careens across the park, Bowie racing behind him. The little dog arrives at our feet first. London reaches down, takes the tennis ball he brings her, and chucks it across the park. He takes off after it, and Bowie lumbers after him.
What was wrong with the way you said things?
I squeeze her shoulder, then lift my hand and run my thumb along her jaw. She moves with me, a soft breath ghosting across her lips. I inch closer. I'm not sure if I deserve her. I'm not sure if I've earned her. But I want to try. The only way to know is to put my heart on the line and tell her the truth. I like to think I'm a good guy. I want to believe I do the right things. But nobody can do that all the time. And I've had my share of fuck-ups over the last 2 weeks. There are things I should have done differently, I admit. I have my flaws, but I hope she wants me in spite of them. But I want to do things differently from now on. The only thing I don't want to change is this. I don't want to lose you, London. You're more important to me than the job, than the club, than what happens next in my career. Her eyes sparkle with happiness, a wild sort of joy filling them.
I don't want to lose you either,
she says, and those words make everything better, knowing that we're in this together. I sigh happily and sway closer to her, cupping her cheek. I am so in love with you, and I don't want to lose you. Whatever happens next in my life, I want it to happen with you. And I hope you feel the same. She grabs my face, draws me to her, and presses her lips to mine, giving me the softest, most wonderful kiss any man has ever received. Then she pulls back.
I am so in love with you, and I want to figure everything out with you too.
Best day in the history of ever. You mean it?
Even if you go to San Francisco for the job? Her smile is wide and bright. Actually, I am heading to San Francisco for the job. I saw my friends last night, and I decided to go.
A part of me doesn't want her to go, but a bigger part is thrilled for her, for this opportunity, for what it means for her career.
All right. What's the plan? I'll be there every weekend if you want me to. I'll fly you back down here.
She laughs, shaking her head.
You don't have to. I only took the job because it's for a month. It's a limited run. It's a great opportunity, and I'm super excited to do it. I took it knowing I'd be back here soon. My family is here, my friends are here, and you're here. And I believed that I'd be back together with you. If the job was longer than that, I would have said no.
I melt a little more for her, fall a little deeper, love a little harder.
You mean that?
Of course I mean it. I wouldn't take a job and move away even when we were on hold. I saw my friends last night and I was bummed about us, but also hopeful. I know what we have is special, and I was going to come see you today and tell you that I'm crazy about you too.
My grin is bigger than this city. More than crazy, I say, feeling like I'm walking on air.
So much more than crazy,
she says as Mr. Darcy scurries over along with David Bowie. They run circles around us, Bowie dropping the tennis ball this time, begging for someone to throw it. I heed the dog call. I reach down, pick it up, and throw it across the park. Then I gather London into my arms and kiss her once more. Everything about this moment feels right. This is where I first talked to her in depth. This is where I first knew she was the woman I wanted to see. Here we are again, giving this thing between us a real chance. When I break the kiss, I run a hand through her hair. Remember when you saw my tattoo?
I sure do.
I pull the sleeve up on my arm. I've always been so fixated on the points, but I've never thought about that empty space created in the middle, I say, pointing to the spot. Now I realize that spot's been waiting for you. Right there, in the center of me. She grabs the neck of my shirt and pulls me closer.
That's exactly where I want to be,
she says, and she smashes her lips to mine. We pick up on that a little later, when we head to my place, toss some hedgies to the pups, then strip to nothing in seconds. We move together, kissing, touching, loving. A day with London that I never want to end. But it does end because I need to work that night. I have to finish out my commitment to Archer. He's not there, but that's okay. I do the job, and when I'm done, I text London, and she meets me with her dog at my place. Now, this is a perfect end to a perfect day. Chapter 37. The dogs snore softly at the foot of the bed the next morning. London's eyes are still peacefully closed, her thigh draped over my leg. I could get used to this. But my bliss is short-lived when I grab my phone, spotting a message from Archer asking if I can meet him for coffee this morning to finish our discussion. I check the clock, then fire off a reply confirming the time and place. I take a quick shower and throw on some clothes as London stirs in bed.
Where are you going?
Her voice is all sleepy, sexy. I have a meeting with your brother. Shouldn't be long. Stay. Relax. I will return with coffee and bagels. She smiles softly.
I'm so glad you didn't say muffins.
Muffins are gigantic calorie bombs that can't commit to being cupcakes. If I want a cupcake, I'll get a cupcake.
Exactly. Not a pale substitute. You get me,
she says, watching me slip on my shoes. I do. I definitely do. I give her a kiss, then leave. I open the door to the coffee shop, scanning the room for Archer. He's camped out in the corner, typing away on his laptop. Two steaming mugs sit on opposite ends of the small table. House roast, black, right? He asks as he gestures me into the other chair. That's exactly right. Thanks. I'm impressed he knows my order and consider it a good sign that he bought my drink. I slide into the chair, still confident that leaving Edge is the right decision, but curious as to what's on Archer's mind. He closes his laptop and his attention shoots squarely to me. We didn't get a chance to finish our chat Friday night, but I'm glad I've had the time to think through things a bit more. I'm just glad you still want to speak to me, I say, half-joking, sitting up a little straighter. He smiles, but his focus remains locked in. I know you're starting to branch out and do your own thing, and I respect that, but ownership had some exciting new developments to share during our camping retreat, and I'd like you to hear me out. I'm listening. We're opening two new spaces in the city, with additional plans to expand up the coast. These won't be nightclubs, they're going to be event spaces, weddings, corporate events, birthdays, and such. Archer pauses to drum his fingers on the table. What would you say to a contract position helping our company oversee bookings, communicating with clients, and organizing and staffing events? I speak for the owners when I say we'd be thrilled to have an exciting new startup company under contract to help us manage these additional venues. In short, I want to know what I can do to make Edge Events a client of your new company. I part my lips to speak, but I'm not entirely sure what to say. I'm floored. I take a drink of my coffee, digesting this unexpected offer. It's awesome, the chance to grow my business, plus the gig sounds like a ton of fun. But the best part is that Archer knows how I feel about London, and he still came to me with a work opportunity. I look at my soon-to-be former boss, and my career worldview all clicks into place, and I see what I couldn't see before. Tracy and her father burned me. But that family isn't every family. Archer and I have a working relationship built on professional trust. My love for London isn't at odds with my career goals. It can live right alongside them. Hell, my relationship with the Hollis family is enhanced because we share the same passions. I draw in a breath. All Night Entertainment would love to be in business with you. It sounds like an exciting chance. I'm extremely grateful for the offer, Archer. That's great news. We'll get a timeline organized and shoot you a contract by the end of the week. Sound good? Sounds great, I say, extending my hand to shake. Thank you. But as the words leave my mouth, they don't feel like they're enough. I search for what I really want to say, finding it in my heart. Seriously, Archer, this opportunity rocks. I'm not sure I deserved this chance after leaving Edge, but I promise I'll make the most of it. You bet on yourself, Teddy. That's always a strong play. But that's not all I need to come clean about. I spent the better part of 2 weeks trying to have my cake and eat it too. Least I can do is let the guy know how much I appreciate his outlook, but also how much I intend to do right by his sister. I'm also happy you're being so chill about my dating London. I intend to treat her like she means the world to me. Because she does. I hope so. Archer says, turning intense. Because London may be a strong, independent woman who knows her own mind, but she's also my little sister. So if you hurt her, cheat on her, lie to her, forget her birthday, I will end you. Understood. I wouldn't have it any other way. I say as I sip my coffee, slightly afraid of Archer, but mostly thrilled that London has this kind of love in her life already. That evening, London and I go on a date to the Greek Theater, an intimate outdoor music venue nestled in the trees in Griffith Park. As the night winds down, the two of us drunk on music, holding hands under a blanket, getting lost in the stars, Ben Folds plays one of his signature hits, The Luckiest. I look over at London, and we share a knowing smile. I flash back to the moment in the market when we heard this number. To when I wondered if I'd have a chance to tell her my philosophy about song timelines. Now is that chance. Did I ever tell you my theory about certain songs? You didn't, but I'm dying to know. Sometimes you need to hear a tune one more time and then, boom, it feels brand new again. Tonight is that night for this song. Are you feeling lucky? She asks, a little flirty, a lot happy. No, I'm feeling the luckiest. Her grin melts me as she leans in and drops a kiss onto my lips. What do you know? I feel the exact same way. I squeeze her a little tighter and nuzzle into her. I also feel like he wrote this song for us. I whisper to London.
Maybe he did.
I gently kiss her right behind the ear. Just the way I did on our first date. Only this time, it won't be our last. It'll be the first of many. Countless, I hope.
Chapter 38. London. Sends pic of Mr. Darcy sitting on top of a stack of moving boxes.
Olive. Moving in with awesome boyfriend day. That's the best kind of moving day.
Emery. Yay. So happy for you. I knew he was the one. Not just the dog, but the guy. I read enough scripts to know when the storyline is perfect.
Maybe their romance will become a book, and then we can listen to the Pegasus regale us with the tale of their courtship.
And Emery can sell it to Hollywood.
Dreams do come true. Especially since London found a man who gets all her beautiful sides.
It's true. He gets her science geek side and her dance nerd side.
And her obsession with ice cream side.
He gets my dog fixation, too.
We all do, London. We all do.
Epilogue. 6 months later. I look good. Suit, tie, button down, ready to rock it at Temple Israel later today. After one last glance in the bedroom mirror, I head into the living room dressed for a Saturday afternoon gig. London is curled up with a magazine on the couch, bookended by two fur babies nestled against her thighs. Those lucky dogs. I'd be jealous if I didn't have the same access to her. But I do, so I don't mind sharing with the two pooches I love. Her eyes sparkle as I enter the room.
Oh, look at you in your sexy tie.
Thank you, I say, showing off my look with a spin.
B'nai mitzvah today.
Figure two twin boys becoming men is a tie-worthy celebration.
Well, you look scrumptious.
Thanks, Lucky. What do you have on tap today?
I'm taking these two over to the dog run in a bit. Then the burlesque brunch show I choreographed has two sold-out seatings, so I'm going to run downtown and check them out. Make sure everything looks good.
I grab my phone and keys, then head to the couch to give Bowie a high five and Mr. Darcy some scratches. Do you need a ride downtown? After I set up, I can come home and give you a lift if you'd like.
Nope, I'm good, London says with a smile. I'll take the train. My boyfriend introduced me to the joys of public transit.
He sounds like a cool guy.
He's all right, she says, smiling. Besides, this will give me a chance to look over my notes for Andre Davies' music video shoot.
From the little I've seen, you're going to blow them away. Like you always do. Like you did with the show at Edge. I say, since her choreography has turned out to be a huge boon to business, Archer and the partners have been thrilled. I bend down to give her a kiss. See you tonight, then. She moans lightly, sending sparks all over my skin.
Indian food and Mythbusters?
She asks as I head to the door. That sounds like a perfect evening. Sexiest Saturday ever.
It will be if you don't lose that tie. I have plans for that tie. The tie-me-up kind of plans.
Yup. Great sex. I'm having it. Leave it to London to make perfect. Even better. Another epilogue. 1 year later. It's a picture-perfect Saturday with my woman and our pooches at the dog park. The park is full of the usual weekend crowd, four-legged friends playing in packs while their owners sip coffee or toss tennis balls. This has become a regular highlight of our week. Only this morning should be a little out of the ordinary. In a good way, I hope. In the corner of the park, London gives Mr. Darcy some well-deserved belly rubs, and I scratch Bowie behind the ear to divert his attention from a squirrel in a nearby tree. Petting him has always settled my nerves, and I could use that calm right now. I steal a glance at London, who's cooing at her favorite little guy. Her love of dogs is yet another thing I adore about the woman of my dreams. There are so many reasons I love her. And that's why it's time. Today. Now.
One more calming breath, and I pull the custom-made hedgehog from my hoodie pocket and place it in my pup's mouth. He truly is man's best friend. David Bowie, go show London the hedgie, I tell my boy. Like a dog who's rehearsed this dozens of times, he takes off across the park, rapidly closing the distance to London. No going back now. But I don't want to go back. With London, the only direction is forward. I follow the dog, my eyes fixed on my favorite person, the woman who's had my heart for more than a year now. Bowie reaches London, where she's crouched down next to Mr. Darcy, and nudges her elbow with his nose. I take my time, making my way over as my pity sets the hedgie at her feet. Good boy.
Aw, Bowie, you brought Hedgie to the run today,
London says as she picks up the toy. She turns it over and her eyes land on the large words embroidered on the stuffed animal's chest. Her lips part. Even from a few feet away, I hear her breath catch. She mouths the simple two-word question that could change both of our lives. Marry me. She stands and meets my gaze. My heart pounding wildly, my fingers tingling, I take one more step, then drop to a knee. I don't care if anyone else at the dog park is watching us. At this moment, hell, in every moment since I've met her, the only thing I care about is London. I speak from the heart. Words I haven't written down, born of the feelings that have been running through my mind and soul for months now. London Hollis? Before I met you, I was focused on my career and assumed that relationships would need to take a back seat for a while. Then I saw you air guitaring by the bar at the club, and I swear, it was like my focus narrowed to only you and everything else vanished. She smiles, and her grin has a life of its own, bursting with emotion. I remember that night perfectly. When I went home, I thought about you all night long. Everything we said to each other. Everything I wished I'd said. Then I saw you at the dog park the next day, and I stopped thinking about how to get lucky, and started to feel like maybe I just was lucky. Seeing you again? Talking to you? Nerding out over Jane Austen and 90210? Rocking from the 1790s to the 1990s? Best dog park visit ever, she says, her eyes shining with tears. It was. Even our dogs liked each other. I love all the things we have in common, but this connection is more than that. You're the most genuine person I've ever met. I admire your passion and dedication to your work. I appreciate the way you listen to me, and I adore the way you care for those dearest to you, humans and animals alike. And every day I've spent with you since the first time we talked, right on this spot, has been the best day of my life. Her bottom lip quivers and her hand flies to her mouth. Her reaction spurs me on. So, now, here I am, at the scene of the best dog park visit ever, asking if you'll give me a lifetime to continue getting to know you. What do you say? I don't want to get lucky. I want to have lucky. Forever. Will you marry me? Tears slip down her cheeks as her grin spreads even farther.
Yes, Teddy Lockhart, I would love to marry you.
She drops to her knees, throws her arms around my neck, and plants a fantastic kiss on my lips, one I will remember for the rest of my life. But I don't linger, because I have a ring to put on her finger. I dig into my pocket and pull out a small velvet box. We stand as I lift the lid of the ring box. London takes one look at the diamond, then locks eyes with me.
It's so gorgeous.
So are you. I slide the solitaire on her finger, then give her a second or two to stare at it. Or maybe gawk is a better term, and her reaction makes me so damn happy.
I love this ring, but I love you more, and I love what this means. I can't wait to be married.
I can't either. I cup her cheek and kiss my fiancé, a kiss that lingers until finally we're interrupted by other tongues, dog tongues, licking our legs. We laugh,
Then I look once more at the woman who's going to be my wife, and I grin like the happiest guy ever. Since I am. Standing here now, with London in my arms and our dogs by our side, I have one final theory. I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. We hope you enjoyed How to Get Lucky. Please stick around for some outtakes and an audio interview with questions from fans. Thanks. Curious about Sam? Turns out he has a story to tell too, and he revealed it to us in this short epilogue. Read on and enjoy Sam's happy ending. Sam's epilogue. The key to being a successful dancer is to make every woman in the room feel like she's the one. Like you're dancing just for her. I approach my lap dancing the way I approach surfing. No two rides are ever alike. Every woman, like every wave, has her own energy, her own power, her own vibe. And since dancing, like surfing, is a give and take, every lap dance is unique. That's why I don't get nervous. You have to let the moves flow, let the moment happen. There's no space for nerves. Worries lead to wipeouts. Tonight, though, nerves thrum through me when Teddy pulls me aside backstage. It's a familiar tableau. DJ Insomnia doing his thing, handing Bulge his umbrella for its raining men, or asking Carlos how the night is going before he spins the next tune. But he's here as a bud. Only as a bud. Since I asked him for a favor. That better be why he's here. What's the story, Morning Glory? I ask, and I'm not afraid to offer a quick prayer to the goddess of all good things about what he might say. Please let it be the tip I want. And I don't mean the monetary kind. The story is, it's a go. I raise a brow. That eases my nerves. She's cool with it? Not only cool with it, pretty sure she was all giddy when London suggested she order the Sam specialty. If I were the type of guy to pump his fist, I'd do just that. Instead, I say, and I'm ready to deliver on that special order. Teddy tips his chin to the club. I better get back out there. I'm sure they're missing me. Right, definitely, I say, nodding exaggeratedly. I'm sure it's hard for them to enjoy the Abolitious show without you. Did you or did you not want me to hook you up with... The music shifts and Teddy mimes zipping his lips. I shoo him off. Go, be on your way. I'll let the hips handle the rest. Your services are most appreciated, I say, and Teddy returns to the club to join London, Olive, Hawk, Nate, Eli, and the woman of the night, Emery. The woman I've been digging. She's focused, driven, and a power babe of the highest order with that LA entertainment executive look that just does it for me. And has, right from the first time I met her when we all went out for tacos and mini golf. Yep. She's been running through my thoughts like the windmill on hole 8 ever since. Pretty sure she's into me, too. Every time we all get together, Emery and I seem to wind up closing the joint down, chatting, talking, vibing. That means it's time for a lap dance. Since we're a review-style club, lap dances aren't common, but for the right woman, I'll make an exception. As Stanley and Carlos work the stage, I find my way over to Emery in the crowd. Her blue eyes are wide and excited, but with a hint of nerves in them, too. I take my time, my body moving with the music, the slow beat of What I've Got by Sublime, one of my favorite songs. I lock eyes with the sexy blonde who looks like she came from work. She's all buttoned up and businessy, and I just want to mess that hair up and kiss all her lipstick off. But all in due time.
Hi, Sam.
She says, a little breathy, a little embarrassed, all enticing. Hey, Emery, I heard you might want to dance for your birthday.
Usually I like cake, but I thought I might splurge tonight.
I straddle her thigh, pumping my hips, nice and slow. You should definitely splurge then.
On cake?
She's both a little shy, but also a lot curious, which is a lot of a turn-on. That's something I don't always feel on my job, but I'm definitely feeling it tonight. With her. Cake, or dancing, or anything you want, I say with another thrust of my hips. Her breath catches, and her shoulders shudder. Hell, I shudder too. Because I have had it bad for this woman for months. And dancing for her is not like dancing for anyone else.
Do you think there's something I might want?
She asks, like she's testing out flirting with me. Yes, Emery, flirt all you want. I hope there's something else you might want. She takes a beat, exhales, her cheeks pinking up.
And would you give it to me?
I'd give you anything you want, I say, as Bradley Knoll croons. She lifts her hands like she's about to touch my hips. There's a no-touching rule in general, but I don't want her to abide by it. I bend closer, dip my face near her ear, and whisper, "Come home with me tonight, and the next night, and the next." She shudders out a,
"Yes."
And I can't wait for my shift to end.
Emery, I'll be the first to admit it. I've had a thing for bad boys in suits who turned out to be secretly married. It's not my best trait, but it's one I've aimed to break. So it helps that Sam's the opposite of a suit. He's also the opposite of married, and unlike the men in my past, Sam isn't uptight. He's easygoing. But mostly, Sam's not like the other guys because he's open, honest, and takes life as it comes. That's what I need. That's what I want. Also, his abs are fucking spectacular. When I get him home to my place that night, I waste no time stripping him down to nothing so I can get my eager hands all over his gorgeous body. And fine, I've seen his abs countless times, but now they're mine. All mine, and I intend to enjoy every second with them. I drag my nails down them. Can I play with your abs all night long?
All night, any night. But first, I believe you need an orgasm or two.
I say yes to that. Well, it's more like, yes, yes, yes. And then I say it again in the morning, and for the next several months as we date, fall in love, and move in together. Then I say it again one night on the beach as the waves crash and he gets down on one knee.
Emery, you're the yin to my yang, the balance in my life, the center of my joy. But mostly, you're the person I most want to chill with and enjoy every second of this beautiful life with. Will you be my wife?
And I say, yes, just like I did the night he danced for me. And that's the story of how I broke my addiction to suits and married a sexy AF dancer instead.
And we lived happily ever after, with both of us getting all the private lap dances we could ever want. And that's it. That's Sam and Emery's story. We hope you enjoyed it. Now it's time for an interview with me, LB, and some hand-selected questions from you, the fans. Hello, it's Joe here again. So Lauren and I decided to do something fun to close out this audiobook production of How to Get Lucky. We asked listeners in advance to submit their questions, so I'll be spending some time answering listeners' questions about this audiobook and working together. All right, let's dive in. Elizabeth D. has a question for me. What is your favorite line in this book? My favorite line in this book comes in one of the scenes when Teddy is at the park on a hike with his dog, and she performs a dance for him and sends it to him, and it's set to Nirvana's Come As You Are, and he says, "I might come as I am." That is definitely the best line in the book. That's not just my favorite line in the book. That is officially and categorically the best line ever written. Leanne S. asks Lauren, what made you decide to co-write with Joe? Did he ask you? Did you ask him? Was it like a promposal, or more just a niggling idea that wouldn't leave once the seed was planted? Lauren gave me a reply to share, so I'm gonna share that with you guys now. This is Lauren talking, but I'm not gonna do a Lauren Blakely voice. This project came about in an unexpected way. Joe turned in credits for an updated version of the short novella Too Good to Be True, and he left on some entertaining bloopers for my producer and me, in which he did the credits in a variety of accents. They were so funny that I wrote back to him and said, I should write a book where you have a character who does funny accents. He replied, or we should write it together. And then I said something like, yeah, sure. I didn't believe at all that he was serious. So we just kept going about with me writing and him narrating, and then he broached it a few more times. We tossed around a few ideas, and then I said, well, I kind of had this crazy concept for an all-male point of view book. So I took a first stab at a prologue that was actually pretty much 100% different from the one that exists in the book, sent it to him, and said, write the next chapter. I'm going to be totally blunt, but I don't think Joe will be shocked that I'm asking him to read this out loud, but I totally expected it to suck. Thank you, Lauren. No disrespect to him. I just figured he could narrate and not write. But when he sent it back to me, I was delighted. It was funny and entertaining, and it made me laugh, so I said, let's keep going. The story needed work, and we took it in different directions, moving Teddy away from the original plan, characterization, and moving him into a DJ who was falling for his boss's sister. And once we hit 10,000 words, and it seemed like our voices were coalescing enough, we decided to move forward with the project. That is, that's all accurate. Nobody's asking me anything, but that is totally accurate and really cool to kind of go back down to the original seeds of this whole thing. I'm so happy that we stuck it out and that Lauren believed in me. It's such an awesome feeling to have written a book. Victoria B. wants to know, was the process of writing your first romance novel everything you thought it would be? Not just the writing, but also editing, proofing, picking a cover? Was there so much more detail involved than you imagined? I'm going to be perfectly blunt and say, I knew writing was hard, but I had no idea how hard writing was. Lauren was an incredible teacher and an amazing guide and really patient and also extremely fixated on scheduling. And she's got a whole team behind her. There were so many resources that she shared. I know for a fact that writing it with her was 1,000 times easier than it would have been trying to write on my own, so I am really profoundly grateful to her and for her support and all of her expertise and knowledge. Was it everything I thought it would be? It actually really was. It was more than I thought it would be. I just am full of so much pride, and I'm just so thrilled. I'm so amped. I'm so excited. I love working on other people's stories. I love happily ever afters. I love living in these worlds where things work out and people find love and they find each other. And to finally be able to sort of put my money where my mouth is, and after having read over 400 of these, say, I think I could do that, and actually do it, is a really great feeling, and one that I'm really very proud of, and one that I'm going to keep very close to me for a very long time. The nuts and bolts of it obviously were cumbersome, onerous. It's still going on. As I record this, we actually just received the final cover, went back and forth with this incredible woman who designed the cover for us, and all of it was informative and interesting, and like I said, with Lauren kind of guiding the way and leading the path, I was never going to get lost and always just going to learn and have a blast. Christine S. has a related question. At any point of the story, did the character or direction of the story go in a different way that you or Lauren envisioned at first? That happened throughout the story, and it was interesting because Lauren and I would do the best we could to kind of sketch out ideas and have a sense of the direction of the piece, but a lot of the story was kind of written on the fly. And we would write something, the other person would edit it, send it back, then add something new, then that person would edit it, send it back, add something new. So everything really kind of gelled together. We really do feel like we just have shared ownership over the whole story. But it was incredible the way things would change and the way something we thought would work really didn't work. Jobs needed to change, relationships with ancillary characters needed to gel and morph, become more, become less, become different. Yes, I would say at every point in the story, something changed that sort of sent us in some new direction. And I've done a lot of acting and I've done a lot of work, and I will say that there's something very unique about writing, for me at least, as far as the way the characters kind of take over your mind. There really was a moment where it didn't feel like Lauren and I were writing the story so much as Teddy and London were telling us what had to happen next and where it needed to go. And that was a really incredible sensation. Really. I've never had anything like that happen to me as an actor. So I think maybe there's something about really the immersive nature of spending all that time with the words. And it really is very time consuming that really kind of connected me to those people, and eventually they became real to us and they kind of take over the storytelling. And then we just sort of sit back and make sure that it's flowing and it's dynamic and the stakes are there and the obstacles are there and their goals are realistic and their ability to overcome what's in their way is dynamic and interesting and believable. Claire A. asks Lauren, what is the biggest challenge in co-writing a book? Lauren gave me this answer to share. I'm a very independent writer. I'm used to completely setting my own writing schedule, establishing my own discipline, and being 100% in charge of the world and the characters. The toughest part is learning how to let go of some of that and letting another creative person into the world to help shape things. Once I'm able to give up some of that control, and I don't always do it well, no comment, it's very freeing to let somebody else take the reins at times and shape what happens. That's fun for me to kind of reflect on. For me, I've found creatively I always work better in groups, and having Lauren be that sort of disciplined voice and keep us on task and make sure that I was hitting deadlines, and having to answer to her meant that there was no night where I could like put off writing. I had a human being that was relying on me, and that meant I had to stay on the ball. So that was really helpful. I keep answering all of Lauren's questions, but nobody's here to stop me. Karen H. wants to know from LB, what's the trickiest thing about writing characters of the opposite gender? LB had this to say. At this point, I don't think it's tricky to write characters of the opposite gender. The key is understanding the character, what they want, their background, their conflicts, and their flaws. If you understand that about somebody, then you're able to understand their use of language and how they speak. I don't really try to let gender, frankly, interfere with writing the character. I think as long as you have a handle on their way of speaking and their voice, the gender isn't an issue as long as you understand who the person is. I love that answer, and I've actually started to say the same thing about narrating characters of the opposite gender. Stop worrying about sounding like a woman. Stop worrying about inhabiting that vocal quality. They're people. Everyone is a person. They have goals, wants, desires, needs, objectives, obstacles. Pursue them, go after them, and bring them to life on the microphone or on the page. Good answer, Lauren. Jody M. wants to know, how much of me is reflected in Teddy? And if so, in what ways are we similar, different? Did I feel more connected with Teddy when narrating because I helped create him? And in what ways? I'm going to answer the second part of that first. I definitely felt more connected to Teddy than I have a lot of the heroes that I've voiced. And the simple fact of the matter is, I've never been more prepared to narrate a book in my life, because I have been immersed in the world of this book for months now. So I feel very connected, and Teddy is partly my creation. So I am very protective of him, and also feel like I've spent a lot of time in his head, more so than I have any other character, just by virtue of the fact that I wrote this, and I couldn't have possibly spent the same amount of time, and I didn't help write the other books that I narrated. So it was a very unique process. I'm doing this interview literally as I finish the epilogue, so I still have that energy with me, and it was very exciting. I was just very galvanized by the connectivity I have to the material, and it felt really special and very unique, and I hope that reads when you guys listen to it or when you read the book. Jody M. wants to know, how much of me is reflected in Teddy, and if so, in what ways are we similar, different? Did I feel more connected with Teddy when narrating because I helped create him, and in what ways? Well, I'll give you a couple of fun little personal facts about me and Teddy. We both love Dan Dan noodles. We both play tennis with one of our best buddies. And we both really love Los Angeles. There you go. Tiffany S. asks, Lauren, what was your favorite moment in How to Get Lucky? LB says this. I love the text message exchanges with the heroine and her best friends. We wanted the book to be entirely told in the hero's point of view so that Joe could narrate the entire story, but we both knew that we needed to see more of London. We had tried a number of devices to show her point of view, but once we settled on text message exchanges with her two friends, it was as if all the lights went on in a house. She was a delight to write, so much fun. And her friends were hilarious, so I truly enjoyed those exchanges. And I always enjoy any scene with a dog, especially when Mr. Darcy tries to get in on the act. Not that I know anything about Chihuahua mixes who try to do that. Jing K has a related question for me. What was the hardest scene to write in the book? I feel like the book somehow got easier and harder to write as we went on. As you knew more, as the details became more specific, as the world became more three-dimensional, everything took on more weight, everything took a little more energy to craft. I feel like a lot more of the scenes later in the book went back and forth between us, maybe more so than some of the chapters early on, but I don't know that there was a particular scene or moment that really stuck out to me. I just know that it felt like as we had more book, as we had more knowledge of who these people were and the world they were a part of, everything got put under a more intense microscope and took more energy and effort to refine and polish. And I hope that the end result is that you see these really three-dimensional people in a really three-dimensional world that are full of a lot of shade and color and detail and precision. Farah B. has a question for LB. There are several authors who have narrated their own work, Lauren Rowe, Lily Valente, Tanya Eby, etc., and narrators who have written or co-written books, Andy Arndt, Aaron Mallon, Ava Erickson, Karen White / Gray, and narrated them as well. Have you ever thought about, tried, or wished you could narrate your own books? Yes, Lauren, have you ever thought about narrating your own books? In Lauren's own words, I'm pleased to share the news that I have zero interest in narrating any of my titles. There are so many phenomenally talented narrators out there, so one, there isn't a need for me to narrate, and two, I love writing, so that's what I will focus on doing. Claire A. wants to know, which part of this book am I the proudest of? Probably the ending, just because it ended and to get to have a hand in writing a proposal scene is just really a lot of fun. It's one of these incredible moments in the human experience. And it's great to sort of imagine how these two characters that we really did get to know and sort of became real to us, how did they share this moment? Where were they? What did they say to each other? It was a lot of fun for Lauren and I to write that part of it. So, and also, it meant we were done, which was a very satisfying feeling. Along those lines, Nicole P. wants to know, what was my favorite experience with writing or narrating this book? I am in this booth now, having just finished the narration, and I feel like I'm floating on a cloud. I've worked really hard the last 3 days on this narration, but it has felt like some of the best hard work of my career. So I can't think of a single specific moment that jumps out at me. I really love the character of Sam. I loved narrating him and bringing him to life. He morphed a lot for me and Lauren in the writing process and really became a character that early on I don't think we knew very well and just became a very realized human being for us. And so getting to voice him and just kind of tap into my LA roots and that kind of laid back, chill vibe of somebody that just kind of lets the world come to him and recognizes that his power is just in being present became really fun. So that was great. I'd say that was an experience that was a lot of fun. And that really translates. That kind of answers both questions because, Sam's development, which that wasn't even his name originally, his development from the page to the stage, if you will, to the booth, was really very long, dynamic, and interesting. And so to get to give him a voice, a physical voice, and let him exist in space, has been a ton of fun.
Amanda T. wants to know, since LB hasn't worked on many collaborations, what made her say yes to this one? Spoiler alert, Joe would also like to know the answer to this question. This is what Lauren had to say. Well, what would you have said, Amanda? Smiley face. That's true that I don't work on a lot of co-written projects. That's because I really enjoy controlling a story and shaping it from the very first line to the final line. So co-writing isn't something that I naturally seek out because I have a rhythm and a style and a process that works well for solo writing. But I was intrigued with the prospect of co-writing with a narrator, and I knew it was something that listeners would likely enjoy quite a bit. So once I learned that we would be able to meld our voices, I decided to go for it. Did you love it like we do, Amanda? Yes, Amanda. Let us know. Find us on some social media platform and let us know what you thought of the final product. Leanne S. has a question for me. What is one positive aspect of co-writing that you wish others could experience not only in writing, but in any co-working or team experience? For me, the team aspect is that accountability. I love having somebody that I have to answer to, somebody that I have to look in the eye or email or phone call and say, I did what you expected me to do, or I came up short. Sometimes you come up short because the words aren't there and a moment doesn't feel right, and that's okay, but you owe this other person your best, your best effort, your best time, your best energy. So while we were writing, it meant I had to take care of myself physically, emotionally, be present, be available. Lauren really is a juggernaut, and she had a lot of balls in the air at all times, so it also sort of felt like I used to play goalie, and sorry, I still play, but I was better when I was younger. I'm a goalie in soccer, so there's a lot of, like, just sort of being ready. You know, you're up on the balls of your feet. You can't sort of be flat-footed. For me, I think the experience of co-writing was that, sort of always being ready, ready to move, ready to react, ready to be fully committed and present and give every move, every save, every line, every whatever, your best effort. Sarah B. wants to know, when I was writing, did I consider how the scenes would come across in audio or how they would be to narrate? Did that have an effect on how we created that scene? Absolutely. And I think a lot of authors have talked about thinking about their books being read out loud, having made them better writers. If it's not conveyed clearly in the audio, it's probably not being conveyed clearly on the page. So that helps a lot. There's a couple outtakes that you'll hear where the sentences were kind of long, and that's something that I am aware of as a narrator. But sometimes you're writing and then the character has a full thought and they write this long sentence, or you're describing a passage and a couple details find their way in there and then you have this long sentence. Some things you notice then when you're narrating, because you're hearing the words out loud, fully realized, and that's also pretty exciting too. I'm very happy to report that I really loved listening to this book out loud. I'm trying to stay in the scenes and be present in the moment, but I'm also in the back of my mind aware of how this is reading as a story, and a story that I helped contribute to, and that is very exciting, and was very exciting, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed narrating it. Trish D. asks, what's LB's favorite book Joe has narrated? Lauren says, everything Joe has done for me. That feels a little bit like a professional answer, bit of a cop-out, but I will take it. I will say that I have loved working on every Lauren Blakely project that I have been lucky enough to be a part of, and obviously this one, How to Get Lucky, is always going to hold a very special place in my heart. Thank you all so much for listening, for reading, for supporting us on this journey. Thank you for sticking around, and I hope you enjoyed this interview. I hope you enjoyed the book. Please let us know on social media. We love hearing from you guys, and we are eternally grateful to have your love, support, respect, and cheerleading. It really means the world to me and to Lauren. So thank you all so much. Thanks for joining us. Bye. Oh, hey, you're still here? Well, in that case, let's do some outtakes. But I know that sex shouldn't be on a schedule. Not unless the schedule is part of the foreplay,
like sending dirty daytime texts to your partner about what you're going to do at 10 o'clock sharp when you're mad with desire after a full day spent apart. That sentence is hard. We'll do that again. Don't forget the specs. He breathes another long sigh. Poor Stanley. He seems like such an idiot.
Oh, I would have forgotten everything, Teddy.
Bowie mans the home front while I'm putting on the...
This is so fun! Fuck!
I casually make my way up the...
I'm full of so much energy.
Okay. Settle down.
Terrific. But I should probably get your name first. I'm London, like the city.
There's a hint of rasp in her voice that I did not put in that sentence, so let's record that again.
I did a book with a double-dicked alien.
Did
she
really?
Was so delighted with that idea that this is, I think, the second book she's had me say something about it in.
Yes. I've had this chat with people before, other female narrators, and I was in the minority having not done a book with a double-dicked anyone.
I haven't either.
Wow.
You haven't? Oh, yeah. No.
Oh, you guys. We're missing out.
It was a really good book.
All
it was
right.
A really good book.
Hopefully one of those will come my way.
Or two of them.
But I had this great dance mentor at Montclair in Jersey. You know the type. One of those people who can, you know, like, write, and then it's like, blah. Take two. Nothing beats B&J's. I can't help myself. That's true. Everyone loves good BJs. I know I do. A laugh bursts from her as she quirks one eyebrow.
This is silly.
BJ jokes. I couldn't agree more, but there are risks in life you take, like choreographing a new court, making the dance moves happen.
Was there no spark?
There was so much spark.
The problem...
Sorry, I said smark. Can I say one more time?
I should have said, there was so much smark.
What is
smark?
There was so much smark. Unfortunately, there was no spark.
There was so much smark.
Plenty of smark. Okay, one more time.
Yes, it's not too PDA-y. PDA-y? PDA-y? Love the PDA-y. Hey, it goes great with a nice Rioja. He runs the club? I ask in a voice that barely sounds like my own. Archer, he's my brother. You probably know him. I drop my head in my hands as all my luck drains away. Oh no, poor Teddy.
I will not cave. You have my word.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes.
I wonder what
happens. I think she's
going to
cave. Friends forever. She's going to cave.
Is she going to do it or what?
I think she's going to cave.
I don't know. I don't know. She seems really resolute. Also, you can't. I tried and you can't, right? You can't lick your elbow. It's like
arm. It's not physically possible.
Right now.
It's not physically possible.
I think that's like the joke, right? Like
unless maybe
you say
could,
it
like,
and then people try.
Maybe you could like dislocate your shoulder.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, if you could dislocate your shoulder.
I feel like I'm getting
maybe.
Pretty close.
Wait, I'm going to try too.
Do it again, Maxine.
I don't
okay.
have...
Oh, she's
I'm
trying.
Like good,
she's going for it.
I'm like 3 inches away. Wait, I need to move it. Oh, I want to see the video.
No,
wait, do it again. Do it again.
Like, great. That was like right wait. There. I got
really.
I got
do one more time.
That
I wasn't
close.
Watching.
Okay. Let me see.
Your mic is blocking your the money shot. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty close.
It's pretty close.
It's pretty close.
All right.
Okay.
Comedy gold.
I trudge up the steps to my condo, unlock the door, and am greeted by 50 pounds of I don't care if you just had the worst best first fuck date ever. There's too many words in an abbreviated hyphen italics thing. Do it again. I trudge up the steps to my condo, unlock the door, and am greeted by 50 pounds of I don't care if you just had the worst best date ever. It's time to show me all your attention. Affection. Fuck. Take three. What did I think? I think I'm like every guy in every movie when the gorgeous friend he's falling for tries on a bunch of outfits and prances around the dressing room and comes out with silly hats and gigantic sunglasses. That's a long sentence. Who's writing sentences this long? Who can I complain to about the length of these that's me. Right.
Who wants to do a Digital Warden impression?
I mean, do one of us do this?
No, he's going to do it.
No, he's going to do
okay.
It.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay.
You can take it, kitten. You can handle both of us at the same time. That's right.
I don't really do my man voices like that.
Just relax. You feel us now? Fuck.
Sorry.
Yep. Eli is pure Tom Ellis at his Lucifer best, and he sounds like Ellis, too. I should probably have known that he had a British accent, since I fucking wrote this. I can't tell if she's laughing at him, me, or whatever was on his phone. God, I hope it was a cat gif. Maybe, you know. And also, is it gif, gif? Nobody tells me these things!
Teddy sounds like my favorite audiobook narrator?
You guys, it is him.
What?
She flicks a strand of dark hair off her cheek, her lip gloss smeared, the scent of margaritas swirling around her like it's her new perfume. It's her new perfume. Tequila and lime. Fuck. She flicks a strand of dark hair off her cheek, her lip gloss smeared, the scent of margaritas swirling around her like it's her new perfume. Come on, that wasn't right either. And it was... I tried to fake it. Fuck.
Oh, sorry, that's you.
Girl, you trying to steal my line?
I guess.
You ain't
Ladies,
got enough lines?
You're both pretty. Hold on now. Hold on.
Okay. Okay, I'll go back to my line. Mm-hmm. Here we go.
The maid of honor jumps up and down. A bridesmaid claps.
If you could be my Obi-Wan, I would just kiss you. I mean, I won't kiss you because I totally love my husband. Well, he's not my husband yet. He's going to be my husband in 3 days, and I'm not going to kiss anybody else. But if I did, it would be you, as long as you tell me that you can do me one thing. Oh, I almost did that monologue, and I didn't because I fucked it up at the end. Fuck.
London. Hey, you. Maybe it's the hey, you that does it. Oh, it's so cute. He's really into her.
Breaks out emergency nightstand Bob. That just sounds like I have some kind of soccer coach in my nightstand.
I like the, yeah. I like the idea of Bob just being there.
Hey, ready for the needle, right?
Yeah, cool. Well, yeah, see, Bob. I'm having some feelings over here.
Well, honey, that's normal. Yeah.
You're a growing girl, and sometimes our bodies do this.
Oh, Uncle Bob, you're the
Bob,
best.
You're ruining it.
All right. Jeez.
I lick her once, teasing her. And my God, she tastes better than salted caramel. Caramel? The fuck is caramel? All of it feels like we're just starting. Vroom, vroom. Just kidding, they're about to have sex. Everybody, stay focused. Taking the condom, I sheathe myself and slide into her from behind, pumping slowly to give her time to accommodate my length. Because I'm long, and I'm strong, and I'm down to get the friction on. Just kidding. Pay attention.
He's waking up. More later.
Foiled.
So, she leaves the unasked question dangling. I left a gig for you at your house last night. A gig? A gift. You left a gift, you idiot.
Deal.
Ooh, nailed it.
Better.
Nailed
so,
it,
that
guys.
Was so much better.
Thank God.
I could just see the review on that one. Aaron Mallon said deal. I didn't believe it.
An entire day devoted to celebrating love while surrounded by family and friends? An opportunity to meld two separate worlds into a larger, richer community?
Sounds nice.
Da 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 da.
This has been How to Get Lucky, written by Lauren Blakely and Joe Arden. Performed by Joe Arden, with appearances from
Erin Mallon as London in the group text messages,
Emma Wilder as Olive, and
Maxine Mitchell as Emery.
Produced by Tyler Whitlatch at Plunk Productions. Story and production copyright 2020 by Lauren Blakely and Joe Arden.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.